Okay, welcome back from a little break after Pesach. And we're at the end of Perek Tesayin in Shmuel Aleph. And we're going to be starting Pasuk Yud Tes shortly. But there's still some unfinished business we have to take care of before we can move on with that. So let's start with it's a very interesting piece from Rav Tzadok that I was able to find. Unfortunately, this is all in Rashi's script, and it's a fascinating piece. It really is a fascinating piece. So we're going to go back on something we did before. Okay, it's fine. So when Shmuel went to anoint someone from the house of Yishai, it back in Perek Tesayin Pasuk Ches, it says that the first son that was brought was Avinadov. Thank you. And he was brought before Shmuel. I'm sorry. Let's go back. Eliyav. I'm sorry. Perek Tesayin Pasuk Vav. He brings him Eliyav, and he says, and Shmuel figures, oh, this is the Mashiach. This is the king. And Hashem says, Al Tabet El Marehu. Don't look at his, how he looks and how tall he is, because I rejected him. Because as a person looks, Hashem doesn't look the same way. And this was all part of a lesson that Hashem was showing Shmuel, that although in the past Shmuel said that I am the seer, I can see, Hashem says, you know, you can't see everything. And if you recall, why was he rejected? If you recall why he was rejected? Anybody remember why he was rejected?
Because
Chazal say that he was a guy who's going to get angry. He's going to get angry. Later on, he gets upset with David. Gets angry with him. And so what is it that he's able to see? So Hashem is able to see that even what's in the future, the other people don't see. Now the question is, how can you reject the guy if he hasn't done anything wrong yet? In other words, he didn't do anything wrong yet. He has kas, he has anger. It's part of what, you know, it's part of his mitos. But I see in the future he will do this. So what is it that you see in the future? So David HaMelech is going to do some averus too in the future. Like, how is it fair to disqualify the guy from being a king for what he sees in the future? So there's a piece here. It's from Rav Tzadok. It's in his Kuntres Divrei Chalomos. It's he would have dreams, and Hashem would give him Torah in his dreams. And this was the Torah he wrote that he got in his dreams. Much different dreams than I get, for sure. So it's over here in Os Tes Zion, and he said it, the dream happened to him on Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Bamidbor. What it has to do with Bamidbor, I have no idea, but that's just where it came from. He's explaining something in, where are we now? Parshas Vayiga, it should be in Sibaru. Out of braces for all. Parshas Vayeshev. Should be in Vayeshev. Yishlach. I'm sorry, Vayishlach. Yeah, it's in Parshas Vayishlach. And it's one of these difficult psukim to understand. Oh, here it is. Perfect. So we know it says it's on the way of Yaakov returning back home. So after Rachel dies, it says in Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Chav Beis, a very odd pasuk. It says, "Vahi bishkon Yisrael ba'aretz." It was when Yisrael lived in the land of Israel. Hahi in this land. Vayelech Reuven vayishka v'sbilha pilegesh aviv. So the literal translation of the pasuk means Reuven went and he slept with Bilha, who was the concubine of his father. Vayishma Yisrael. Yisrael heard about that. Then there's a break in the pasuk. Within the pasuk, there's a break, which is, you don't see this anywhere. It's not, not even at the end of a pasuk. In the middle of a pasuk, there's a break in the Sefer Torah. And then it says, Vahi b'nei Yaakov shnei masar. And the children of Yaakov are 12. So very strange pasuk. And then it lists the 12 children of Yaakov. So now we'll pick up Rav Tzadok over here. And he says something very interesting. He says, Parshas Vayishlach, it says, Vayelech Ruvain, etc. Ruvain went, and then it says, Vayhi b'nei Yaakov shnei masar. And Yaakov had 12 children. So the question is, Daika us, why Dafka at this time do we have to start listing Yaakov's children? I mean, there's nothing exceptional going on at this point in time to list his children. When he goes out to Mitzrayim, we list his children. I mean, there's ample opportunities to list his children. But what's the point of doing it now? And the bracket says, V'zeh ha'pam ha'rishon sh'nimna misper ha'shvatim yachad. This is the first time in the Torah that they're listing the tribes by number. Didn't mention the number before, and they could have mentioned it after Yosef was born. Why are they mentioning at this point? So he answers like this. He says, a very important yisod. He says, this is what he got from Hashem, gave him in a dream. He calls man shlo yotza hachisaron, as long as a deficiency does not come out and rear its ugly head. Shahayabo lifol b'maisa, that it will come out in some kind of action. So lahoya efshar limnoso b'chlal ha'shvatim. We could not list Reuven amongst the tribes. Mipnei ha'chasaron sheyesh bo b'koch, because of the deficiency that he had in potential. In other words, Reuven had a particular flaw. And his flaw, as Yaakov tells him before he dies, is pachas kamayim al tosar. You are very impetuous. He's an impetuous guy. That is his fault. So Hashem knew what his fault was, and he clearly has this fault. And he's carrying around his whole life this fault. And the question is always, umi yodea ad heichan hu magia? How far reaching will this fault come out? How bad will he be? He has this terrible fault. He does things before he thinks. Now, we could have some really horrific results with such a personality. And v'ulai chas v'sholom yitcha l'idezeh, it could be he could be pushed out of the Jewish people through this. Kishayotza lipol, when it comes to the actual reality, when it comes out. So Reuven was carrying around a character flaw. Who knows how bad it will happen, because all actions depend on character. And he has this character flaw. And, you know, we're not sure if he is going to remain one of the 12 tribes. Just like Esau, for example. Esau was a great, great person. Let's not minimize the potential he had in greatness. He had a lot of potential in wickedness. And when it was time for Esau to show his potential in wickedness, he showed it. He showed it in all the terrible ways he lived his life. And he worked himself out of the Jewish people. And has never counted in the Jewish people. Reuven had very bad, potentially negative traits. And therefore, we don't know how bad he's going to be. And therefore, now the bracket is what relates to us. The kol chet gam kodem shu b'poel. Now remember, the word chet cannot always be translated as a sin. Chet means a deficiency. It's chet. Literally, it means missing the mark. So you can be in a state of chet before you've actually done a sin. And that's always what we're always most concerned about, is what about the characteristic that exists that the sin can bring about? So he's saying, so any chait, any deficiency, even before it comes in action, yeshna b'koach, shumuchan l'zeh, it has the potential that you're prepared to do evil activities. And here's where we need, where it relates to us, koshenisker b'Eliyov, as it's mentioned by Eliyov, when he comes by and Hashem says to Shmuel, Ki ma'astihu, I have rejected him. V'amr chazal, why? So Gemara Pesachim says, V'mtei kaso, al shachara apa b'david. Because he was angry later on in the next story we're going to learn, he gets angry at David. Now the question is, v'zoha ya'achar kach, that was afterwards. But the answer is, because afterwards it came out to reality, and this deficiency was there even beforehand. And the only thing that happened later on was after it came out into reality, it was clarified, you know, the ain't a chesaron, so that's it. No, so after the brackets now. So he finished the brackets with Aliyev. So that's why Aliyev was rejected. Since he had this potentially dangerous characteristic, so he could not be the king. And it's as if it's already there yet. So that's what I said. So in terms of making someone a king, Hashem, you know, cheshbens it even before. Even before you've done anything wrong, if Hashem sees something bad, it's going to come out. Now, I know this opens up a Pandora's box over here, but let's just finish it up with Reuven. So now after the brackets, let me come back to Reuven. So Reuven's carrying this potentially dangerous character trait. So now it came out. How did it come out? So what happened? We know, Gemara says, anybody who says that Reuven slept with Bill is mistaken. It means, what did he do? He switched the beds. He just switched the beds. Yaakov has put his bed in Bilhah's tent after Rachel died, and Reuven was sticking up for his mother's honor, so when Yaakov put the bed from Rachel's tent into Bilhah's tent, so he went and took the bed and put it in his mother's tent. So that was chutzpah, tantamount to, you know, on his level, tantamount to sleeping with her. He didn't, but that's what it is. So now, after it came out, and it came out, and his bar was clarified, de'ena chesaron ela b'davar kal. It was a deficiency, but relatively minor. Even though the Torah says it's like he slept for her, but that's because of the microscopic way God looks at the actions of a tzaddik. But at the end of the day, he didn't kill anybody. He didn't sell Yosef. He didn't want to do any of those terrible things. He had it within him to act impetuously. And, you know, some is an impetuous person, only after the smoking gun has fallen a person does he realize what he's done. Right? But when the worst what he did came out, as Chazal say, anybody who says Reuven sinned is only making a mistake in terms of how severe the sin was, right? And that's what he says in the brackets, because of his level, you know, go to the next column. And for this relatively minor sin, he sat in sackcloth and ashes, v'taniso, and he fasted, v'shav b'tshuva shleima, and he did complete tshuva, ki'ilo ha'yachat gamar. He treated it as if it was the most worst sin in the world. And he opened up for his brothers to understand how this is do tshuva over a relatively minor sin. U'bezet nisbara maloso ha'shleima. So now that clarified his pure level, she'em bo chasaron, that he ultimately does not have such a deficiency. And that's what he did. Va'alkein, therefore, oz daika, only then, nishla minyan yud be'shvatin, could we say that the number 12 tribes was complete, she'em nimnumen should be counted with them. In other words, what's Tzadok saying? He's saying that when a person has a negative characteristic inside of him that is eminently capable of terrible things, you know, that person is a walking time bomb. And he is what we would call he has a chait within him. He is a chote in terms of he has a deficiency within him that is capable of doing terrible things. So Reuven had this inside of him. And if you look at the brothers, you know, in other words, he probably, and as we see, as we've learned through Tanakh, you know, Reuven was always it wasn't so pushit with that tribe, because they were the ones who wanted on the other side of the Jordan River, and a lot of murderers came out from them. Reuven was not such a pushit tribe. But at least at this time, when he was developing within himself, he was eminently capable of killing Yosef. He was eminently capable of doing a lot of things. So Hashem could never count him as part of the 12 tribes. When it was time to count the tribes, you know, I could have counted earlier, but Hashem said, I ain't going to count him yet, because who knows what's going to come out of it. Now, of course, you can say, but Hashem knows what's going to be. But Hashem records things in the Torah based on where it is at within Reuven's own self. And Reuven was capable within the realm of Reuven's. Now, remember, don't confuse if you're looking from God's side or from Reuven's side. Right? When the Torah is written, it's written for us to learn from it. So it's got to be, we learn it from our side. So we see Reuben walking around with these with this mita that can surface out. I think we all know this when we raise our children and we see certain children have certain negative mitos, and chas v'shalom, who knows what could happen if a child will ever allow that mita to reach its fullest and most ugly fruition. So Hashem knew what Reuben was walking around with. Even though Hashem knew at the end of the day it would not manifest in the worst way, but for recording in the Torah, when Hashem writes, these are the 12 sons, right? That has to be written at a point that, you know, that Hashem can say with certainty that he's going to come out good. From the perspective of, from this world, everybody in this world would know it's going to come out good. So when it came out, it had to come out. It had to come out. There's no way it's not going to manifest some way. So when it came out in such a way that it was a relatively minor thing, and that's the ugliest it ever got, and right away he starts doing tshuva for that. So then Hashem realizes, and we can realize, that negative trait has run its course, and thank God in a not such a terrible way. And that's when the Torah now writes, well, now that he did this, and that's, he went and he switched the beds, and now that's the worst it got. Then it says, these are the 12 sons of Yaakov, because he's not going to write himself out of the Jewish people. So that's how Rav Tzadok puts it in, ties it in over here, where he's saying when he sees this evil trait within within Aliyav, even though nothing's happened, but as far as Hashem's concerned, he's already is a sinner. That's it. He's already is a sinner. He cannot be the king anymore. He cannot be the king anymore. Especially, and probably even though what came out of Aliyah wasn't that bad, but he wasn't king. if the evil would have come out, his anger would have come out as being a king. Remember, when you're a king, you have unlimited power. Unlimited power. So, okay, so then, you know, so that's the idea. So that's why he was rejected. So that's what Hashem was teaching Shmuel, that you think you could see, that I can see better than anybody can see. I can see when there's a mita that hasn't even come out yet, and nobody really knows that he has such a temper, but I know he's got such a temper, and it is going to come out. And I don't remember it coming out if he's a king. Because remember, a temper is always balanced, well, not balanced, but on the other side of the coin of temper is arrogance. It's arrogance. Rambam tells us this. A person who has a temper usually it goes with arrogance. You're arrogant. You think you know everything. Why aren't things going your way? That's why you get angry. Okay. So when you're just the son of Yishai and you're not the boss of everybody, so when your temper comes out, you know, only so much arrogance came out. But now if you can become the king, if he would have been the king, and then the anger would have come out from being the king, with certainly he would have had much more arrogance had he been a king, then it would have come out in a very ugly way. So Hashem says, you know what? I don't want him, because I'm afraid, you know, because who knows how far he can go till the bad mita expresses itself. And if he's going to express it as a king, whoa, that's going to be bad news. And therefore he's rejected even before him. Okay, now it's mind-boggling, you know, how Hashem makes all these calculations, because on the other hand, so then, why did he do it with Shaul HaMelech? Shaul HaMelech had a major character flaw. He was too humble. The answer is, that wasn't Hashem's choice. That wasn't Hashem's choice. It was the Jewish people's choice. The Jewish people wanted a king. So Hashem says, you want a king? I'll show you what kind of king you're going to get. So therefore, he didn't mind that Shaul would fall. But the Mashiach Hashem, the very first king that Hashem wants, and that is the best one we're ever going to get. Okay, remember, who was it? It was David. And David, with all the faults, but David is the one who everything comes from him. So one for everything comes from him, you know, I can't pick this guy. I can't pick this guy. So it's a very important, this is really what Sefiras HaOmer is all about right now. The whole idea, what are we working on right now? We're working on character. Now, even though it may not have come out yet, some characteristics that we have may not have come out yet. We have to work now on improving whatever faults could be. So that's why, you know, it's critical. And if you're carrying around this character fault, as far as Hashem's concerned, he says, watch out. Who knows what's going to happen with this guy yet? And therefore, we have to work on them before they rear their ugly heads. That's powerful in saying, yeah.
Saying over and over again is the difference between anger than other motives. Like anger is something that's in a class in itself. Maybe the fact that it could be the fact that, you know, impetuosity is a negative thing, and Shaul's, whatever we want to say, whether it's weakness or whatever it was that Shaul's failing was, anger, you know, is something that Hashem says he can't tolerate. I think the word he used...
It's arrogance Hashem can't tolerate.
There's also anger that like Rambam says that anger is one meter that like, you can't have even...
Right.
It's a class in
itself. Okay. Well, I would imagine if he would have to anoint Shaul as his choice, he wouldn't have picked Shaul either. Even without that, he wouldn't have picked him either. But I hear. Okay, so that's one thing. There's one other thing before we move further. In Pasuk Yud Ches, when Shaul falls into this depression, and he asks to have a young lad brought before him that can calm him down, someone who can play, so... We mentioned the Malbim on Pasuk Yud Ches. Let's just go over that Pasuk Yud Ches. Vayan echad me'anorim. So one of the young lads responded. Vayomer, he says, Hinei ra'isi ben li'yishai beis halachmi. I see a son to Yishai from Beis Lechem. And then the Malbim so beautifully shows us that the next few words are six different clauses. Yodea nagein. He knows how to play. V'gibor chayil. And he is a warrior, the ish milchama, a man of gibor chaver really means a man of strength. The ish milchama, a warrior, unavon davar, a very smart person. The ish tor, a man of stature. Hashem imon, Hashem is with him. Six things are mentioned, and the Malbim lists those six. That's what we ended off last time. So we understand that there are six characteristics are being mentioned by him. So now, if you look, it's interesting, you'll appreciate now, those of you who are learning Navi will appreciate next Shabbos, there is a bracha that we say, let's see if anybody can hop this, trivia question. There is a bracha that we say about David HaMelech that lists six praises about him. It's a trivia question. Okay, we'll give you, until I find it inside the Siri, you have a chance to tell me what it is. A bracha about David. A bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, bracha. That has six praises about David. Okay? You know it, but you just don't, hasn't been pointed out to you. Okay. In the Art Scroll Siddur, page 446, the brachas of the Haftorah. And the third bracha of the Torah is Baruch Atah Hashem Magen David. Right? And we know that the Magen David, from that, the Magen, the Star of David, the shield of David, Star of David, is the six-pointed star. It's a six-pointed star. Because he is the Midah of Malchus. That's the seventh Midah. And what does Malchus do? It takes all the other six Midos and makes them happen. So that's the idea, the six-pointed star. It's not Stam. Six-pointed star is a very mystical and true thing. Right? Star of David. There is something to that. Right? That's the Star of David. Magen David. It's Magen David. And it's 6 points. There's six mitos, and he's able to put them all point center. He's able to use them all in a harmonious way, and that's what Malchus is. Malchus takes the six mitos beforehand and makes it happen. So now, you know, if you look at it, it's not that far of a stretch. If you look in the bracha at 446, it says, Samchenu Hashem Elokeinu Belio Hanavi Avdecha. Hashem should rejoice with Elio Hanavi, your servant, and also Uba Malchus based of Mashiachecha. Hashem should rejoice with Eliyahu and with the Malchus based of it. Clause number one. That's idea number one. Right, b'mheira yavo v'yogel libenu. He shall quickly come and cause our hearts to exalt. It's clause number two. Clause number three: al kiso lo yeshev zor. On his throne, no stranger will sit upon it. Number four: lo yin chalu od acher meskvado. No one else will inherit his honor. Number five: why? I'm sorry. This bimheira yavo is two. The yogel libenu, number three. And then Al-Kisal Yeshiv Zor is 4. V'loin Chol Echrim Eschavro is number 5. And then Ki V'shem Katshecha Nishbat Olo. Because in your holy name, it was sworn to him, Shal Yichba Neir Leom V'ed, that his light will never be extinguished. So it's in 6 clauses. So it's not too big of a stretch to show how the 6 clauses that the servant told Shaul about David HaMelech, it's these 6 clauses that are in this bracha of Magen David. And it's not that hard to show how the 6 fit in over here. We have the bracha of the first part of the bracha is Samchein Hashem Elkein, joy. So what's the first clause? The guy said he's Yoneh Nagein. He knows how to play. And what's the whole point of playing? Singing makes people happy. Since you know how to play, he knows how to play, so it brings joy. So Samchein Hashem Elkein, Hashem will gladden us. He'll gladden us with David because David will once again play. He'll play for us and make us happy. B'mehra yavo, he'll come very quickly, right? As being an ish milchama, as a man who goes to war. Man goes to war quickly. V'yagel libeinu, and he'll make our hearts rejoice. Well, the next clause is navon davar. He's a navon, has a very good intellect. With bina, women have bina yisera, and that comes from the heart. You make the heart rejoice when you're using bina. Bina is associated with the heart, as we'll see later on. And al kisol yeshev zor, a stranger won't sit on it because that's a gibor chayil. You have to be a very valiant person to make sure that nobody sits on your throne. But yin chalu acharim eskvaro, no one else will get his honor. That's ishtar. He has the stature, but nobody else has the stature. And then it says, and Hashem already swore. That's why Hashem imo, and Hashem is with him. So you see that you have the 6 clauses, and that's the 6 parts of the bracha in his name. So, and that all fits in, and the truth is, that's really, it's the Medrash tells us this, in the story of Ruth, when Ruth tells Naomi that Boaz gives her 6 measures of barley. So the Medrash is all kinds of difficult. What does it mean, 6 measures of barley? Was it 6 granules? Was it 6 big portions of that? So ultimately the Midrashic interpretation is, it was a sign that he would have 6 descendants who would have, she would have 6 descendants who would have 6 brachos. And the 6 descendants were David, Mashiach, Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. So David's the first one. David has 6 brachos. So these are the 6 brachos that he has. It all fits into David HaMelech, because that's what Malchus is all about. It's like the cube. The cube has 6 sides, but it's all focused together. And that's what the king is able to take, all those attributes, and use them in a harmonious way. So this is our introduction to David HaMelech. Okay, let us now continue with the new psukim now on Pasuk Yutes. Okay, Vayishlach Shol Malochim El Yishai. Shol sends messengers to Yishai. And he says, Shilcha Eli es David bincha asher batzon. Send to me David your son, who is by the sheep over here. So Malam says, he wasn't yet sure if he would like David. So all he says is, send him to me. I don't know, we'll see, we'll try him out. We'll see what happens. Pasachof, Vayikach Yishai chamor lechem v'nod yain ugdi izim echot. So Yishai sends along with David a donkey and bread and a flask of wine and a goat, a kid. He sends it through the hand of David, his son, to Shaul. As the Malbim explains, when somebody comes to the king, you have to bring a gift. So he's bringing a gift when he brings David along. So that's the proper etiquette to be done. Pasuk of Aleph, Vayavo David al Shaul, and David comes to Shaul. Vayamud lefanav, and he stands before him. Vayehavehu me'od, and he loved him very much. Vayhilo nosei kelim, and he elevated him in stature. He wasn't the only guy who played for him temporarily when he was in a state of depression, but he became his arms bearer. So he was elevated to already a prominent position. Over time, obviously. Chaf beis. Vayishlach Shaul el Yishai lemor, and Shaul now sends word to Yishai saying, Yamod na David lefanai ki motzachein b'inai. David will now stay with me on a permanent basis because he has found favor in my eyes. Okay? So that's what he asked from him, that I want to stay on a permanent basis. I'm explaining it all based on the Malbim. Chav Gimel. V'haya b'yos ruach Elokim al Shaul. And when that spirit of God came over Shaul, that spirit of depression came over Shaul. V'lokach David es hakinor. So David would take the musical instrument, the violin, the harp. V'nigain b'yado. And he would play music with his hand. V'rovach l'shol, and there'd be an ease for shol, as it were, an expansiveness. V'tolvon is good for him. V'sarim elav ruach hara, and the bad depression would go away from him. And the Malbim explains over here, he says that this music that David played accomplished three things. Number one, it gave him a little bit of, you know, less pressure. Okay, inner pressure was released, as it were, and that's the idea of the revach that he had was eased. V'tovlo, and then it'd be good for him. Number two, that he'd now become in a joyful mood, and number three, through that, the evil spirit would go away from him. So there was a definite positive feature to the playing of the harp. Did do something for Shalmach. You see that. Music is capable of changing a person's mood. And this was a very difficult, depressed mood that he was in. And the Malbim concludes and he says, now we're beginning to see how Hashem is arranging things that David should make his way into Shaul's court. And this becomes, you know, the beginning reason for everything that's going to happen afterwards. All that goes on, the jealousy, the this, the that, until eventually he gets to the kingdom. I mean, he was already anointed privately to be the next king. He knows about that. But we have to begin to say how that's going to happen. So, remember, the young lad said six things about David HaMelech. And the first one was Yodea Nagein. He knew how to play. So now we see fulfilled the first of the six aspects. He knows how to play. Now the next aspects of being a Gibor Chayil and an Ish Milchama, and how that all comes, that's going to be coming in the next subsequent chapters. All these six things that are being said are going to have to play themselves out as the young person said it's going to be. So now you're going to see how these are all going to come out. But it's beginning to bring we know what's going to happen. So it's kind of awfully sad that Shaul really loved, if he loved David, that was like an unbelievable thing. It's not just Stam, you know, have a musician, a minstrel play, but it relieved the stress, the depression so much. He had a tremendous love for him. It's unfortunate how things backfired afterwards. You have a question, Mitch? Yeah.
I just wondered when it introduces this Ruach Elohim.
Well, it's been introduced before.
No, yeah. But in this pasuk, and then it says, the spirit of evil would be depart from him. I guess, why does it refer to it?
Yeah, because that was back in Pasuk Tesvav when we had it the first time. But really, this is like the mita of din, the attribute of justice. Elohim is justice. And this was a punishment to him for the sins that he did. And the Malbim taught us before that, you know, when he was the king, he had a very powerful, good spirit. Really good spirit. Ruach Hashem, we'll call it. But now when you lose that good, when the good goes away and there's a void, the void becomes very ugly. You know, when you knew you were king, you know, that's, you know, you have this with a lot of the famous celebrities. First, a big celebrity. How do they become the worst people? Like you see all these guys with these abuse charges and these drugs. After they retired sports players, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them, they become terrible guys. They're monstrous, terrible guys. Because for the time where they are the sports guy, they're mamish given every covet in the world. It's like mamish, that's unbelievable treatment they get. And they mamish think that they're amazing, they're unbelievable people. Then they come to the real world, you know, they're really, besides, you know, running a football, they can't really do anything. And they spend out their money, right? So there was this inflated position they were in. Once it gets deflated, they remember how much cover they got and how much this they went, how great I was and this and that. And now that's all in the past. And that void is so strong. So now it gets replaced with an equally godly, powerfully negative It's the Ruach Elohim. Elohim is the attribute of justice. We get the Ruach. And that's how it says. If you look, I don't know if I mentioned it the last time, in Pasuk Yudalad, it said, V'ruach Hashem Soramim Shol, the spirit of Hashem left Shol, and then it says what, and now there was Vihine, suddenly came a Ruach Elohim. Elohim, we know Hashem is mercy and Elohim is justice. So it's the godly justice spirit that came, and in such a situation, only evil could come from it because it was such a great void that had to happen. So this is what brings him to that state. Okay, so now let's move on to Perek Yud Zayin. We'll just begin a running leap into this, but it's interesting just for one little gematria, which we can't let go so easily. It says Ruach. The Ruach Elohim, and he brought a Revach to Shol, and there's all kinds of Ruachs. There's Ruach, and there's Ruach, Ruach HaKodesh, all these different things. And we see how David is involved in helping this Ruach of Shol. It's his spirit. You know, it was really bad, but when he played, it was a lot, you know, you have Revach. Revach is the same letters as Ruach. He expanded his spirit, and we're gonna see, tomorrow from Rav Tzadok that David really, as much as he didn't bring Nevuah so much to the world, but he brought Ruach HaKodesh, which we'll talk about, divine inspiration. Just a quick gematria. Ruach is the gematria 214, because it's Reish is 200, Vav is 6, and Ches is 8, 214. So when you break that down, you get two things. You get the word Raz, Reish, Zion is 207, means a secret, and then you get Zion 7, which is 214. So Ruach is the Raz Zayin, the secrets of the seven. Whereas the seven is the seventh Mida of David, which is Malchus, and the secret that comes out of that. And we'll see, I don't have time to start it now with Reb Tzadok. It's a longer piece, I don't want to start it now. But that's what David really brings out. He brings out the secret of the seventh Mida. And that's hinted to in the number 214, which has Ruach HaKodesh, which we'll explain more, tomorrow. But let's begin. What?
The word Revach?
Right in the Pasuk. Chav Gimel, right there. No, and then keep reading.
Okay.
For Revach. So Revach is also expansive space, expansiveness. So that he helped Shaul feel better, and he developed this idea of Ruach HaKodesh. Okay. Now we are introduced to a new big terrible figure. And this is the figure of Goliath. Okay, that's our new figure over here. And by way of introduction to Goliath, now we have to remember, now people have this idea that Goliath was like all bad. He was bad. He was really bad. And he had a lot of hatzlocha in being bad. Now, let's just go through Goliath's ancestry. Who is his illustrious ancestor? Is Orpah. Who is Orpah? Orpah is the sister of Ruth. Okay? They were both daughters of a Moabite king. Alright? So they were princesses. That's all. We gotta get into the book of Ruth. 5 weeks from tonight is Shavuos. So we gotta start thinking about Shavuos. So, I'm not gonna go over the whole story, but we know that Naomi's two sons married Ruth and Orpah, right? And then when they died, etc. They come back to Eretz Yisrael, and he comes from her. So the rabbis say, Goliath was a very powerful man. As you're going to see very soon, he was a giant, he was strong, he had a lot of bravado, he scared the dickens out of the entire Jewish people, were totally terrified of him. Shaul, everyone was terrified from this guy. So he had a certain measure of hatzlocha, of success, although be it in a very not nice way. So rabbis say, where did he get this from? So the Medrash says, it comes from Naomi. It comes from Naomi. And what specifically from Naomi? When Naomi parted, came from Orpah. I'm jumping myself. Came from Orpah, his great-grandmother. And what did Orpah do to deserve to have such a child? That when Naomi insisted that the women leave her, go alone, and go back to their roots. So it says that what? Orpah kissed Naomi. And from that kiss came Goliath. So the question is, so wait a minute, that doesn't seem to make sense. She gave Naomi a beautiful kiss. It was a very loving kiss. Okay, you told me to leave. I'm going to leave. I'm going to listen to you. She didn't run away. She gave her a big embrace and a kiss. There's a lot of emotions in that. So from that, you get a Goliath like this. So the answer is that really Goliath was a very refined Russia. Not Stama Russia. There's different kinds of Russias in the world. You have certain Russias that are totally, totally just zeros. There's nothing to them. And then you have very refined Russias who have tremendous virtues, but use their virtues in the most despicable ways. And this is what Goliath was. He was a refined Russia, and that refinement came from Naomi. And this is all based on an idea that Reb Tzadok says. He says, we've seen it already once before. Reb Tzadok says, if you have a non-Jew with an outstanding trait, right, something really amazing, right? He says only one explanation for it. It has to have some kind of a Jewish root to it. It's not possible that a non-Jew is blessed with like an outstanding trait that, you know, there isn't some connection to a Jew. Either descended from a Jew or very intimately connected with a Jew. Because outstanding traits only come from Jews. Non-Jews do not, again, carry the Demus Elohim. They can do things in a very good way, but not in outstanding ways. It just doesn't come. So there has to be some connection. And he gives three examples. Example number one, Bilam. Okay? Bilam was an outstanding prophet. It's an outstanding prophet. It had to come from somewhere. So he says, well, really, Bilam, we know, this Midrashim say, came from Lavan. And something they say it was Lavan. Was Lavan, Lavan Harami. And where did Lavan get his greatness from? Got it from Yaakov. If you look in the Chumash, until Yaakov came, Lavan was a gornished. He was a nothing. He wasn't prosperous, was nothing. Then Yaakov's with him for 20 years. As much as Lavan was a wicked man, believe it or not, some of the greatness of Yaakov rubbed off on him. So that greatness that Bilam had ultimately is because there was a tremendous, if you live with Yaakov for 20 years, it's got to rub off. So it's that greatness. I was used in a bad way, but the great power he had had come from being associated with Yaakov. Haman, who also had outstanding power, where does that come from? Well, Haman comes from Agag, and Agag, it really came from Shaul. Shaul had mercy and let him live. So because of Shaul's outstanding qualities, Haman got that. And finally, Goliath, where does Goliath get it? He gets it from Naomi. Got that same way. So, you know, there's two ways. So in other words, they had a certain degree of Kedusha that they picked up from the Jewish world, but they use it in a very ugly way. It gets misused. So Goliath had a certain degree of Kedusha from Naomi. Naomi had this tremendous drive. And she had a tremendous ability to show her love, but love when it's distorted in an ugly way can be very, very bad. So really, Goliath got his trait from Naomi, from his grandmother Orpah, who almost cleaved to Naomi, but was associated with Naomi for a long time, and picked up a lot of those sensitivities of love. However, he misdirected it. So now, when you have a person, a goy, who's such a Russia, because he has so much kedusha inside of him that is turned into the wrong way, how do you deal with them? So one or two ways. Number one, you can either sublimate them, in other words, rechannel them, that negativity in a positive way, or you destroy them. So let's see what happened. With Bilam, to a certain degree, it was rechanneled because he had to first bless the Jews, and then he was destroyed. Haman, you know, same thing. Even though he was destroyed, he had great grandchildren who were teaching Torah and B'nai Brak. So from that power, good part of the power, you know, it was extracted out good in his grandchildren, but he had to be destroyed. And Goliath had to be destroyed as well. Interestingly, only David is able to overcome this and not Shaul. Shaul did not have the ability to destroy Goliath. Goliath had a tremendous amount of love that was abused, and only David, who came from Rus, who had a greater measure of love than Naomi, would be able to destroy him. And that's how history repeated on the battlefield. And only David HaMelech, with all his virtues, only he could take such a Goliath and take him down. As we will see, as we will learn tomorrow, we'll begin the next chapter inside.
Kissed Naomi, but
clunked her, right. Yep.